Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm your MC, Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin Lundquist.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Doing great. And your managing editor, Jake Shaw. How's it going, Jake?
I'm just ready for OU.
I'm sorry. We're going to cover Kansas pretty quick because if any of you guys watched the interviews after the game, it was pretty obvious Baylor was ready to move on. And they didn't really even want to talk about anything except OU. But let's start out by asking Jake, what were your thoughts on Petty's first half against Kansas?
I thought it was a lot more of the same that we've seen from Petty this year and not what we saw early of last year. I thought it actually could have been even a little bit worse to start the game just because, again, not only the focus on throwing downfield, but he had two or three sideline routes to receivers that he threw high, and that's been a consistent problem with him this year. So it was pretty concerning to see him miss wide open guys, and not wide open guys 40 yards downfield, but wide open guys who are running 5 to 10 yard routes. He rebounded in the third quarter, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But his start to the game was not very uplifting from a Baylor perspective.
My belief is, will echo Jake to a greater extent. I thought that the mid-range balls were pretty brutal. There was a ball over the middle intended for Clay Fuller where he has a perfect throwing lane. He has Clay wide open for about a 12, 13-yard reception. He just overshoots him by a foot and a half, which I don't know if it's a confidence mechanics thing or just flat out he's just not accurate anymore. That part of his game is either diminishing or it's regressing or it is what it is. But it's a part of his game, and it's a part of this passing game that really needs to get back on track because it's still not there. And look, if we're going to put substance behind 60 points, the substance is if you have this kind of performance in Norman on Saturday, it's probably not going to go very well. So that's the greater attention that it looks like to me. The other thing is but from a very positive standpoint, was that I thought the running game looked about as good as it's been all year, even though Johnny Jefferson is still limited because of his hamstring. But you saw Devin Chafin, a completely different Chafin than what you saw at any point of the year because he's free from the ankle injury. Thought his first step was amazing. Really took some of the heat off of Shaq Linwood because that's what your running game is supposed to look like under the Art Briles concept. Thought it looked really, really good. What, 325 yards or whatever it was, nearly 100 yards more than what they lead the Big 12 with. So I think that's a great spark. Thought the defense did what it was supposed to do against a team that just doesn't have enough athletes on it and took care of business.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out, and not to be an uber brass petty defender, but he started out so torrid against, you know, pretty average people that there's no way that you're going to see that type of 70%, 500, 600 yard passing games throughout the guy's career. And I think that we do have to remember this is a guy, he's been put in for another award. You know, Maxwell, he's getting put in for all these awards. And even though he is not as accurate as we would like him to be, he's still doing a lot of good things. You know, he's got three interceptions for the entire year, and there's a lot of teams, like you look at Tech, they're having three interceptions and a half. So I do think that while, yeah, the accuracy is a thing, Petty's still doing some good things.
Yeah, Steven, there's no doubt he is. It's all relative. I look at those throws at the sideline. That's what any quarterback should make, not just great quarterbacks. Any quarterback should make. I think that's what's concerning. But yeah, I mean, I think Baylor is very fortunate to have him, and I don't think many people take him for granted. I just think he has shown that he can make those passes with ease, and he can throw downfield. But he's not quite doing it, you know, for a lot this year. And I think that's what the concern is. I don't think anyone. Well, I've heard people say they want Petty bench, and I think that's ludicrous. But I maybe not ludicrous. I think it's unreasonable right now. But the fact is, he is missing throws that I'm sure 90% of college quarterbacks will make or should make. But you're right. I mean, people have gone overboard on him some, and I think a lot of that can be unfair.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, there were a couple points of like the 10-yard touchdown pass he threw to Levi Norwood in the third quarter. I mean, that's as good a mid-range ball you're going to see. That thing was thrown on a dime to Levi right in the end zone. I mean, and if he would just hit that ball a little bit more than what he has been here in the last few weeks, I don't think you would have major near the concerns. Yeah, to call for his removal as the starting quarterback is a little bit over the top, because I still don't think Seth Russell would be ready to take over an offense having complete command of it until next year. But at the same time, I think that this is a case where, you know, Bryce just needs to kind of understand that a lot of it is on him. And he's caught so much heat because he has not delivered in big games. Look, played poorly at Oklahoma State last year, didn't play very well in the Fiesta Bowl, didn't play very well at West Virginia. So it's kind of a track record that he's building. So I think there's a lot of angst going on to another big game on the road at a place where Baylor's never won at, like saying, what are we going to get from him? And I think even though the complaints against him are somewhat reasonable, it's still something, though, that he has to answer and something that he's got to deliver on, because and he's got it in him. I do believe that. It's just a question of what can he do to put it all together so that what could happen on Oklahoma could vanquish whatever happened on the road in Morgantown, the Fiesta Bowl, and also in Stillwater last year. Because I think that's really what it comes down to for him.
Well, what it comes down to is just making the throws that are there. If someone's going to give you 5 to 7 yard routes, you got to hit those. You can't throw it high on first down, and you're at second and 10. This offense has shown that it struggles in second and third and long. So it's pretty simple. Just make the throw. You know, some of these throws are not into tight windows. They're pretty basic throws. And I have no doubt he can make them. He just has to go do it. And Saturday would be a great time to start making those. But let's move on about this Kansas. We got to keep this first segment short, I know.
I'm thinking tap down the adrenaline just about a half notch, and I think he's fine. I think a lot of those overthrows are adrenaline. Okay. Now, the defense had just a great game against Kansas. Now, was it that the defense played great, or was it Kansas?
I'll start, and I think it's just a combination. That's the worst offense Baylor's going to see in the Big 12. But Baylor made them look like it, too. I thought there was nothing that Baylor gave up. There's only one play that comes to my mind where I felt like it was just bad defense by Baylor and not the offense beating Baylor, and that's when Colin Brents got beat kind of on a wheel route, and it's the first time I've seen all year that the senior former walk-on Nickelback has been beaten deep, and I feel like other teams might try to go after that. I don't know if Oklahoma has the receivers to do that, but really, outside of that play, any other play Kansas made, it was because the offense just had a good play that would have beat almost any defense. But for the most part, Baylor just really shut them down, and partly is the opponent, but Baylor did what it should do against a team like that. So I was definitely impressed.
I'm gonna keep it short and sweet. Thought that the defense did what it had to do. Of course, everyone's going to talk about the play that Andrew Billings made against Corey Avery when Andrew dropped into pass coverage, but still when a 300-pound defensive tackle is running down a running back, that's going to be one of the signature plays of the year, maybe in college football, when they do a highlight reel film on that sort of thing. But really, outside of the error where the wheel route where Colin Brents got picked, and Kansas got the right matchup on that. Other than that, I mean, Kansas's offense just didn't do anything, and the pressure was pretty solid. Sean Oakman was pretty good. And KJ Smith, I think his development. I think we're not talking enough about what KJ Smith has done here the last couple of weeks since he's come in, and it's really been impressive how he's really come of age. Thought he was really, really impressive, and you hope he can keep it up Saturday in Norman.
Yeah, my takeaway on the defense is that I thought the line looked really good, but I don't think Kansas has that great an offensive line. And really when you come back to the game, no turnovers beats 4 turnovers, and that's just, nature of the beast. All right, Jake, your top takeaways from the game.
My takeaway is that Petty does have it, despite me kind of, you know, criticizing him his first half. His third quarter was very good. He was 6-7. My biggest takeaway is that Baylor cannot just look in one direction, and that's the direction of Antoine Goodley. He's a great receiver, but they can't focus on him at the expense of others. Levi Norwood showed in the third quarter that he's been underused this year. Katie Cannon is precocious for a true freshman, and Corey Coleman is the best receiver on this team, and they need to treat him as the number one receiver. That's my biggest takeaway.
I would agree with that. I think Corey Coleman, you know, as much we didn't appreciate what Corey meant to this team because he missed all of September, pretty much except until he came back for Iowa State. But now you appreciate what he means and what he was going to mean to this offense because he's the playmaker. Look, on the second touchdown pass, he made a great adjustment on that ball because that ball was underthrown. And, you know, you just need someone that's going to lead the offense. And this is no disrespect to Antoine Goodley, but I don't think he's that alpha receiver that this wide receiver group has. And I think that's really what this group needs right now, guys, is they need that alpha receiver that everyone's going to take their lead from. And I think Corey's the guy that can do that. And, I mean, I had a tweet saying Corey's the reason why guys like Katie Cannon and Davian Hall are here, because he's a Rivals 250 guy. He was a guy that was hotly pursued by major Division I programs, including Oklahoma, and Baylor got him. And I think when Corey came here, there were the expectations for him to become this type of wide receiver, and that it could open the door for what we're seeing on this roster now with Hall and Cannon. So that's really important to see out of this. And that's but I do also will piggyback on what Jake said. I think Levi Norwood, who had a really great finish to last year, maybe we'll start to see that now in November, because let's not forget what he can contribute to a passing game. And if they kind of use him a little bit more, I think it's going to be really, really important to the offense's success, because you have diversity with the wide receiver group.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out, and I'm going to stay on the receiver tangent there. I think that, you know, y'all heard me say this a million times. I think that Goodley is a lot better as a short ball receiver to extend the play afterwards, because he has that running back background. He can break a tackle in the secondary. I don't think he's the deep ball guy. I think Coleman's your deep ball guy. But also, I'm going to throw out that I think the biggest thing is getting Levi and Clay Fuller involved, because when Levi Norwood went across the center, Baylor hadn't been going into the middle of the field between the hash marks. And Norwood, he could have opened up a lemonade stand in the end zone. He was so open. So, you know, I think that if they do that, then it'll keep those guys from pressing the outside routes and make them defend the whole field again. And that's what's kind of happened, is that the Baylor, you know, as much as they try to make everybody defend the whole field, they've been kind of ignoring the middle, and they've been pressing those guys on the outside. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Jake has an interview with Josh McQuiston of Sooner Scoop, and we are going to play that for you when we get back.
Hey, this is Jake Shaw, managing editor of SickhamSports.com. Thanks for listening to the Sick'em Sportscast. If you're not a member of SickhamSports.com, now is a great time to do it. All you have to do is go to Baylor.Rivals.com or SickhamSports.com. On the front page, click the banner that says free 30-day trial. You'll enter the code RACETOTITLE, and that gets you 30 free days on SickhamSports.com. We cover everything from recruiting, going to practices, live interviews with coaches and players, the greatest signing day coverage you can find, all on SickhamSports.com. And right now, as I said, it's the best time to join. We got a 30-day free trial. We don't do this much, so take advantage of this opportunity. SickhamSports.com, race the title. Go to it now. Welcome back to the Sick'em Sportscast. This is Jake Shaw, managing editor of SickhamSports.com. Happy to be joined by Josh McQuiston today. I got that last name right, I hope.
Yeah, you did, you know, and like I said, that's always a risky proposition. I'm a guy that grew up with coaches calling him by his first name, so I know the dangers of that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. Josh is the co-publisher and editor of Soonerscoop.com. It's the Rivals affiliate for Oklahoma. First question for you, we asked our readers, you know, what they want to know, maybe some potential questions, and the first three people I answered right away, they want to know the status of Sterling Shepard, Oklahoma's outstanding receiver.
He had one catch last week against Iowa State for 46 yards and then left the game with an injury. So what's the update on Sterling?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. When you talk to Bob Stoops, Jay Norvell, Josh Heupel, all the guys who would be in position to know and to make the decision, they are all adamant that they expect him to play this weekend. The strange thing to me about that is OU has never been overly adamant about guys. They are always very cautious, very very skeptical of what they want to put out to the media. So I can't help but wonder if this isn't a little bit of gamesmanship where, you know, they want Baylor to be, to have to prepare for what is clearly their best wide receiver and really best offensive threat. So, you know, it's hard to agree. Maybe I'm looking too much into it. It just strikes me as strange how uniform and how confident Oklahoma is about the return of Sterling Shepard. But when you looked at the injury, it looked like he tweaked something. It didn't look like, you know, a really nasty thing. It wasn't a contact injury. It looked like maybe a hamstring pull or something like that. And as we all know, sometimes those are overcome quickly and sometimes it's weeks and weeks. So, like I said, I think there's a little bit of mystery still within it, even though Oklahoma has been really clear that they expect him to play this weekend.
Yeah, you know, I saw it too in non-contact. It was a groin injury. Is that right? Is that what they reported?
Yeah, absolutely. That was okay. The report. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, Baylor, I'll first say, is much the same case. They're very cautious, in fact, kind of coy about injury status. It's pretty frustrating to follow a staff like that. And so when you get a staff saying he's definitely back, you want to run with it, but I see why you're a little bit hesitant. If he can't go, how does that affect the wide receiver core for Oklahoma? I mean, who's the next man up, let's say?
Well, it's a great question. I thought Oklahoma showed some growth last week. I think there's no question that if you said who would then become Trevor Knight's number one option, it would be Daron Neal, the junior receiver from St. Louis. He's a guy that's had good moments. He's a very talented guy, was an elite prospect coming out of high school. Really hasn't set the world on fire like I think maybe some thought he might. Really could step up and be Shepard's clear number two, as Shepard was to Jalen Saunders last year. So it's a really strange situation at Oklahoma, and I'm sure to some degree, Baylor fans could relate if that problem had occurred, because you come to expect great receiver play at Oklahoma. There's always kind of that next guy coming, that feel to their group of receivers. But right now you just don't see it. You really see just a group of guys. There's some young players. Makaya Quick gotten two straight starts. He was a rival 100 guy, a true freshman. Has a lot of ability, really a deep downfield guy that just really can do a little bit of everything. But he had some drops against Iowa State. He hasn't been really consistent with that all season. So there is not that guy that you say, okay, that's where the ball is going to go. I think Oklahoma then has to start relying more on its running backs, not just to run the ball, but in the passing game, just looking toward Blake Bell, the tight end more. Oklahoma would have to get a little more creative without Sterling Shepard, because he's that guy that I think Trevor Knight says, I'm going to throw two or three chancy balls a game to and hope he can make a play. And really through this season, Shepard has done it. I don't think they have that guy that can kind of take over and be that true number one receiver if Shepard's not ready to go.
Any other injury concerns for Oklahoma coming into this game Saturday?
Really, Oklahoma's been pretty healthy. Through the middle point of the season, they really kind of got dinged up a little bit. The lone question that remains is Keith Ford, who we were really under the impression was going to play against Iowa State last week, went through warm-ups, was fully padded, looked like he was good to go, and then kind of at the last minute, Oklahoma just backed off and decided to wait a week. I really think he'll play against Baylor. That's my expectation. He's been missing for over a month. Had an injury against I'm going to blank out. I believe it was Tulsa, but that's not right now that I think about it. Anyway, sure. Keith Ford is a guy that was Oklahoma starter from week one. He's a very talented guy. Is a guy they really like, because with all the talent of Alex Ross and Samaje Perine, I think there is an element of Oklahoma's offense being forced to tip their hand a little bit when those two guys are on the field. With Ford, I think you have a good balance of run-pass. He's quality and pass pro. I mean, like, there's just a lot to his game, and I think he's just a little bit more complete than the other two. So I think Ford is definitely a key piece. I think Oklahoma's offense clearly missed him at points. When you look at that Texas game, really portioned to the TCU and Kansas State game. They could have used him out there. I thought it really hurt them that they didn't have him. I expect him to play, and really aside from him, there aren't any key players that are a big question right now.
That's a pretty nice, I mean, to make it this far in the season with that few of injuries, that's you got to feel like you're living right, although some of the, both of your losses, maybe you should question that as well. Going to Trevor Knight, he has, I see 295 rushing yards on the season, but 146 came last week against Iowa State. Was that a matter of just perhaps Iowa State not defending him on the run? Was it a conscious effort to get him more, you know, running attempts? What happened last week with Knight?
Well, there's no question that Oklahoma went to a much more deliberate look as far as getting him some carries. And really, as much as anything, it looked like Trevor Knight was being allowed to read. You know, obviously, mm-hmm. as a Baylor reporter, you're familiar with that zone read, as most of college football yeah. is at this point. And I thought early in the year, it didn't look like Knight was reading. It looked like he was directly handing the ball off. That was the call. He wasn't being asked to really choose with the defensive end. So I thought against Iowa State, Iowa State committed so hard to stopping the run up the middle that Trevor Knight really was being allowed to make the choice. And, again, he's an athletic guy. Those kind of plays are there for him. Now, you have to acknowledge that Iowa State is not strong defensively. And I think that some of that goes to that, or some of his success goes to their problems defensively. But there's no question, Oklahoma made a more concerted effort to run the ball with Trevor Knight, to try and do some things with him. They changed some things up formationally, ran some more of the diamond formation that they kind of liked 2 or 3 years ago, but you really haven't seen much mm-hmm. over the last couple of seasons. So I definitely think Oklahoma went out with a plan to try and assert themselves some more. And I have no doubt that part of it was to give Baylor more to look at, more to think about, and more to game plan for defensively. I mean, I think through the first month and a half of the year, they had been very formulaic, very to a plan. And with this last game, I thought they really gave Baylor a whole new group of things to try to prepare for, which, of course, is a double-edged sword. Baylor gets to look at what you want to do, but at the same time, they have to spend more time on various things.
Yeah, well, it's smart because they've obviously seen Baylor film prior to this game week, and they probably have seen that Baylor has struggled with running quarterback. So I imagine that the defensive staff in Waco is sleeping a little less this week, worrying about what Knight's going to do. Let's switch over to the defense. First of all, the secondary, I've seen there was three straight games against really good teams. They gave up 300 yards through the air. I mean, do you think that was more a product of the offenses they were facing, or do you think the secondary has some vulnerabilities?
I think the secondary has some vulnerabilities. I thought early in the season with Oklahoma's pass rush and the ability they have to get after the quarterback, I mean, you're talking about a group with Eric Stryker, Geno Grissom, Jordan Phillips. You're talking about a lot of NFL guys in that Oklahoma front mm-hmm. seven. And with that, you really kind of thought, okay, this secondary is going to be given time to kind of grow up. And really, you saw it. I thought against West Virginia there was some progress. They had some bad plays. They gave up some big touchdowns. But you saw reason to think they were making strides. And then really against TCU, you kind of felt like it all started to unravel. And really, it continued through several weeks of the season. Now, I should say some of that really coincided with Zach Sanchez having a pretty serious shoulder injury he suffered mm-hmm. against Tulsa. And he played through it, and you have to give the guy some credit for that. But there were times throughout the next few games where he wasn't even fighting off blocks. I mean, you could tell he just didn't have any use for his right arm. Now, he seems to be back to himself, but, again, gave up a big touchdown last week against Iowa State, kind of in mop-up duty. You know, you could kind of forgive him for being switched off. But at the same time, this has been a recurring problem really for a couple of years for Oklahoma secondary. Julian Wilson is a guy that I think Baylor will really try to go at. He really struggled against Tyler Lockett in the Kansas State game to the point that OU pretty much put Zach Sanchez on Lockett and had him follow him around the field. So Oklahoma has some ability back there. Quentin Hayes has played really well this year as a senior mm-hmm. at the safety position. The position opposite of him, with Ahmad Thomas being the starter throughout the year, has been another kind of problem. He's missed a lot of tackles. He's had some problems in coverage. It's just been one mistake after another. And Oklahoma just seems to, you know, sometimes you see these teams that have these kind of mistakes and have these errors, and they kind of get away with it. Oklahoma really hasn't had any luck with that in the last month. And part of that is, like you said, the caliber of quarterbacks they're playing. Trayvon Boykin obviously playing at near Heisman levels right now. And, you know, Clint Trickett, you run down Waters at Kansas State. You just keep going down that list, and there's so much good talent at quarterback. And like I said, they're making Oklahoma pay for their mistakes.
Two more questions for you. I'm not going to ask you to predict the game, but I'm going to get your gut feeling on that. But first, people who don't really follow Baylor closely, you know, see that there's often 3, 4, 5 wide and consider Baylor an air-it-out spread team, when in fact Baylor loves to run. So kind of with that approach for OU, are there any misconceptions about this team that, you know, people who probably don't follow Oklahoma closely have? Or, I mean, do you think their identity is well-known, or is there something that perhaps people are missing out on?
Well, you know, in regard to Oklahoma, I think you see a lot of people that it just, for me, when I look at the team, the thing that I can't get over is the sum doesn't seem to equal the parts. When I look at that Oklahoma team, when they walked out of Morgantown, I thought this is a team that's going to go to the playoff. I really liked what they had. I thought it was a team that was built to win on the road. They could run the ball. They could defend the run pretty well. Like I said, with the front seven like that, it was always going to be tough to run the ball. And when you look at it, I mean, Oklahoma was one of the best rush defenses in the conference, right behind Baylor and Kansas State. And at the same time, though, now that I look at it, I think maybe that run defense looks so great because the passing has been, pass defense has been such a problem. So, you know, I think maybe the misconception is that Oklahoma is just a kind of a physical, grinded out team, when I think at times they've struggled to be that. There's no question to me it's something they've improved on greatly over the last 3 or 4 years. But this team still, when they need that short yardage situation, they need to find a way to get a 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1, they've been stopped repeatedly behind an offensive line that is incredibly experienced, incredibly big, one of the biggest offensive lines in the country. And for some reason, they just can't seem to get over that hump. And I really think, particularly against TCU, it probably cost them the game due to a few short yardage situations that really they either needed to go score or they needed a first down to keep TCU off the field, and they just couldn't get it done.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, you know, before the Big 12 or before the season overall started, this was, you know, billed as the game of the year in the Big 12. That's going on down about 3 hours south of Norman in Fort Worth, apparently, with TCU and Kansas State. So I'm kind of curious about the vibe around this game from an Oklahoma standpoint. I'm sure the Bryce Petty post-Kansas interview reached Norman where he just said, I'm ready for OU over and over again. So I'm just curious, you know, what the mindset is, the vibe is for Oklahoma coming into this game. Is it revenge? Is it getting back in the Big 12 title race? You know, just, I guess, tell me the overall feeling right now in Norman.
I don't think there's any question that this is about as locked in as I've seen Oklahoma. Bob Stoops, you know, somebody brought up Bryce Petty's comments to him during this week's press conference, and he kind of said, oh, it sounds like Bill Belichick, you know, and then the next question he said, well, I'm ready for Baylor. You know, he kind of had a little fun with it, but there's no question when another aspect that came up during that press conference was if Stoops had felt embarrassed about the way last year's game went in Waco when Oklahoma, you know, as you remember, was just destroyed by Baylor. I think, and you know, he said, you know, if I was, I wouldn't tell you guys. And for Bob, that's as much an admission as you're ever going to get. I mean, that's just the way he handles himself. So I don't think there's any question that from the top down, Oklahoma really wants this game. They've got a point to make. They know that, you know, if they lose this game, the Big 12's done. That's really their only goal that they set out with in the preseason was to win the Big 12 championship. Obviously, the national title is off the table. So they know that they still need some help. They realize that. But at the same time, if they lose this week, all the help in the world won't change anything. So I think that's a big part of it. And I think when you talk to the players, they feel a level. You mentioned the word revenge. I mean, that's kind of come up a few times. It's something you continue to hear. Again, you know, we can talk about Bob Stoops being embarrassed, but it's different when you're out there under the lights. And really in that second half when Baylor was just running through Oklahoma and there was nothing OU could do about it, the defense looked exhausted. And I think when you look at an offense that was just so, you know, for lack of a better word, just useless last year in Waco, and to see the growth they've made, I think it's a big point for both sides of the ball to show that, hey, you know, Baylor's a great program. They recognize that Oklahoma's not been one of the Big 12 schools that's really called into question Baylor, like I know Texas has and a few others. But at the same time, I think they feel like they want to go out and prove we're as good as anybody here. We're still a big guy on the block. And, you know, when you throw in the needs of the Big 12 and some of the other things they've got going on within the conference, this is a huge game for Oklahoma, and they're treating it as such.
Yeah, well, we've had a couple of readers on our site. We were breaking down the Big 12 title race, and, you know, most of the talk is about Kansas State, TCU, and Baylor. And someone chimed in that said, you know, Oklahoma's kind of sitting there lurking in the background, but this thing could come down to a tie between two lost conference teams. So Oklahoma wins this. They're not in the driver's seat, but you know, Oklahoma has a good chance to somehow pull it off despite those two losses. Well, Josh,
absolutely.
Really appreciate your time. Again, not going to ask for a prediction, but any of our listeners, readers, they can go to Soonerscoop.com for some pregame coverage from the Oklahoma perspective. But thanks a lot, Josh. I appreciate it, and hope to get talk to you again sometime soon.
Looking forward to it, Jake. Enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Hey, this is Jake Shaw, managing editor of SickhamSports.com. Thanks for listening to the Sick'em Sportscast. If you're not a member of SickhamSports.com, now is a great time to do it. All you have to do is go to Baylor.Rivals.com or SickhamSports.com. On the front page, click the banner that says free 30-day trial. You'll enter the code RACETOTITLE, and that gets you 30 free days on SickhamSports.com. We cover everything from recruiting, going to practices, live interviews with coaches and players, the greatest signing day coverage you can find, all on SickhamSports.com. And right now, as I said, it's the best time to join. We got a 30-day free trial. We don't do this much, so take advantage of this opportunity. SickhamSports.com, race the title. Go to it now.
And welcome back to the Sick'em Sportscast. Okay, Jake, we just heard that interview with Josh McQuiston. What were your thoughts on it?
First of all, I'll say it's pretty good to get a candid interview from someone who covers a team closely, someone who has no problem being critical or praiseworthy about their team. I thought he was very fair in his analysis of Oklahoma. No sugarcoating anything. You know, he essentially said Oklahoma has a better team than it has played like this year. Does that sound familiar to anyone? That's how I think of Baylor right now too. It's just not equaling what its true potential is. So that, and then two, it seems like everybody in Norman is pretty fired up for this game, and nobody's treating this like the old Baylor's coming to town. They're treating it like the defending Big 12 champion is coming to town, and I expect Oklahoma to come out almost like West Virginia did at home, minus the turnovers early that West Virginia had. I think we're going to see a really focused, inspired effort from Oklahoma, so obviously it's imperative that Baylor can match that.
Okay, Kevin, which unit does Baylor need to play the best? Do they need their offense or their defense to play better?
Well, I think in this, I still think it comes down to their defense making plays, because Trevor Knight has shown himself to be a pretty good dual threat quarterback, had over 100 yards at Ames last week. So I think it's really going to be incumbent. This is why this Baylor defensive line was put together the way it was, so that it would be ready to play in games of this caliber. So I think it's pretty important for them to step up. This is where I think for me, if you're going to isolate it, for me, I think it really comes down to the defensive line for Baylor getting pressure, if not sacks, but enough disruption to disrupt the timing of Oklahoma's offense. And, of course, there's going to be some questions with that Josh has spoken to about the injury situation there with the Sooners. But as far as just making sure that Trevor Knight's not comfortable and making sure and let's face it, Oklahoma does not have a lead receiver, even if Sterling Shepard is playing but not at 100%, that really takes something away from them. And then after that, you've kind of got a grab bag with their wide receiver group. So I think that defensive line really sets the tone for this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the one who wrote up this outline for the podcast. It is important that the defense plays well. I agree. But to me, it comes down to the offense. I felt like the offense lost the game at West Virginia. That game was there for the taking. early on, the defense was getting stops, forcing turnovers, and Baylor wasn't cashing them in. The Big 12, more often than not, these games can be shootouts or something resembling a shootout. Baylor's just got to have the offense. They're going to have to put up points. I think Oklahoma is going to score because I think they have such a great running game that Baylor is going to have a trouble, you know, picking which you defend, run or give up deep balls in the secondary. So to me, I want to see the offense come out and play great and Bryce Petty play his best game of the year. If Petty has his best game of the year and this offense clicks, their offense is better than Oklahoma's, I think Baylor wins it. If you say the Baylor defense comes out and clicks, I can't guarantee you that Baylor wins that. But I think if the offense has an outstanding game, that Baylor wins. So to me, it comes down to the offense.
That's a fair statement.
Yeah, I'm going to be like that kid in that commercial. Why not both?
That's not the question, Stephen.
Okay. I'm going to say, okay, offense, but I'm going to tell you something. If both squads don't play well, they're not walking out of there with a victory. I think Ryle said in the Monday presser that Oklahoma, since Stoops has been there, has had like 5 home losses. Those guys are tough in Norman, and that Baylor is going to have to play at a very high level on both offense and defense. No turnovers. And that's going to be big, big, big in there. So I think offense has to move the ball. They got to get some points, and they can't have any turnovers. Cannot give the Sooners a short field. It was absolutely incredible last year that Oklahoma got the ball inside the 5 twice and ended up 3 points.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Biggest key to winning. Whoops, I spoiled that one and gave mine. Well, what do y'all think?
Well, I mean, I kind of talked about the defensive line, but I'll just take it. That will be number one. I guess for me, the 1A, if you will be the running game for me. Again, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm not saying that this team doesn't need to have Bryce Petty play at a high level. I'm not saying that at all. But I just think that, you know, Baylor's offense is so predicated on how successful its running game is. And, you know, if this group can get to close of its Big 12 averages, which is about 230 yards, or even if it hits the 200-yard spot, I think Baylor's in a major position to win the game in Norman. You're asking a lot because, obviously, with the hype, even though I would have loved to have seen this game at night because of all the intensity that probably would have come with it in a night game with so much implications. But that being said, and I do think the fact that it's being played in the morning kind of takes a little bit of the energy out of the crowd so that Baylor won't be facing what it could have faced in the evening. Yeah. But that being said, if this running game, the one thing about a running game is that if it is successful and consistent, it can suck the energy out of the crowd. And if Baylor can get 5 to 6 yards or something like that, or even 4, just be consistent, keep moving the chains and that sort of thing, and then Bryce hits a pass here and there, I think that really changes the dynamics of the game and it gives Baylor a much better chance of winning this game.
I'm going to, a similar vein but different thought, I'm going to say protecting Bryce Petty is my biggest key. I said the offense needs to play well, and I think part of that is the offensive line has to give him some time. He's shown that he's not outstanding when facing pressure. And plus, Oklahoma's strength defensively is its run defense. So I don't think you need to say you have to run against what Oklahoma does best. Where they're vulnerable, and Josh McQuestion said that in the interview in the last segment, is their secondary. They have Zach Sanchez, a guy every Baylor fan knows because he decommitted from Baylor and switched to OU. He's a very good corner, but outside of that, they do have question marks. You know, I said Bryce Petty needs a great game, and that will probably hinge on him getting time to, make plays from the pocket. So, to me, it's protecting Bryce Petty.
Yeah, I'm going to give 3 quick keys. Number one, I'm going to agree with y'all. I think that they have to be able to pass enough to make their Oklahoma's front 7 on run defense become like a front four. They're going to have to pressure Oklahoma's secondary enough to make those linebackers drop back more and open up the running game some. So I think the pass is going to open up the run this week. I think the second thing, they've got to make Trevor Knight uncomfortable. He's seriously, he had a good rushing game last year, last week. Mm-hmm. Baylor's had trouble with running quarterbacks, especially, but they faced some good running quarterbacks. Third thing, defensive line has got to keep Oklahoma's rush game at least somewhat under control. Oklahoma can't chew up half a quarter with a drive. Those are my keys.
Good deal.
All right. Now, what advantages? We talked about what Oklahoma's done, and, you know, Oklahoma's going to have a home field advantage, and Oklahoma's used to big games. So, you know, they're not going to get fainting goat syndrome when Baylor comes in there. But what advantages does Baylor have going into this game? And, Kevin, why don't you start with this one?
Well, I think Baylor has a renewed sense of confidence about playing Oklahoma, and it started in 2011 when they pulled off that last-second win in Waco. Look, they've won two out of the last three meetings, so this is not, you know, in past years under the old Baylor, this was an automatic loss on the schedule, and now it's not. In fact, even the game that they lost up in Norman 2 years ago, it was a one-score game, so it's not like they played poorly up there in 2012. You know, and Art Brough said something about it this week about saying that bringing respect to the series, and, you know, Jake, you touched on it too, where Oklahoma fans are looking at this game far differently now than they had in previous years. I think that says a lot to where this program is now in terms from a regional perspective. Maybe Baylor's national perspective or national respect hasn't reached where you want it to reach just yet. But at the same time, they've certainly gotten Oklahoma's attention. And I think that if they were to pull this off on Saturday, I think it really, not only does I think it changes Baylor's perspective within the conference, even though they've got everyone's attention and respect, but it magnifies that a lot more. I also think it really changes how everyone across the country looks at this program. I mean, there's a lot of heat on this program, but I think it really, to pick up this first ever win up there, but I think it really changes the dynamic. When you win at a place where you've never won before and you've had your face and you've had sand kicked in your face every time you've gone up there, I think it really changes everyone how they look at you.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Kevin. I do think the confidence has changed about coming to this matchup. My advantage is not so much an advantage Baylor has over Oklahoma, but an advantage for the program is that they're in a very experienced road team this year. They've played at Buffalo, they played at Iowa State, played at Texas, and then obviously had the losing effort at West Virginia, but that's the kind of game that a team can use to their advantage. You got to remember what you did in the pregame before West Virginia. It was also a morning game, an 11 o'clock kickoff. You know, you've got to take those negative experiences and turn them into a positive. And I think Baylor has that advantage of having a flat tire on the road and remembering everything they did in preparation and knowing what they have to do differently this time. I think Oklahoma is, you know, similar as West Virginia, maybe a little bit better. So Baylor knows it's going to take a much better effort than they had in Morgantown to win. And so I think, you know, that's you can channel, you can make the most of that loss you had, and who knows, maybe that loss comes back to help you because it shows you what you must do in Norman to get a win.
I think that Baylor's advantage is, I think, number one, their receivers are definitely better. I think that gives them a better passing game. I think they have a more complete offense. On defense, I think they're pretty good. I think they're pretty good in defense. The defenses are remarkably similar in that both have really strong front lines, really good linebackers, and there are questions about the secondary. So, you know, I think that Baylor has maybe a little bit more talent on the field, and that's, I think, their advantage. Kevin, what you were talking about, TCU, and, Baylor and getting the national respect, that's when they really started getting their national respect was last year, the game with Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Where that's been dimmed a little bit is that their next two big-name games, they lost. They lost the Fiesta Bowl. They lost a lot of style points by losing the Fiesta Bowl. Yeah. If they do this, the thing about beating Oklahoma is it is a blue-blood school. They're not having an undefeated season, but they're having a good season. Texas is a blue blood, but they're down right now, so nobody raises an eyebrow when they beat Texas. But Oklahoma is one of those blue bloods you got to beat if you want to be big name. And what I started to say about TCU is that right now you got two things going on. Number one, Kansas State is ranked in the top 10. That's one of the reasons TCU is ranked so high, is because it gives them a top 10 matchup. And, yeah, I do think that the standings are rigged by what makes the highest game. If Oklahoma was ranked in the top 10 right now, Baylor would be ranked in the top 10, so they'd have a top 10 matchup. But the
conspiracy theorist here.
Wow.
I like it, Stephen. You're venturing into territory I don't dare to, but I like
it. Crazy Noel here.
Second thing about TCU right now is that they have already played. They got Kansas State coming up. Other than that, they should be heavily favored in their next three games. Baylor, after they play Oklahoma, still has that big game against Kansas State, and that is no gimme.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's no point in getting too upset about the rankings right now because Baylor, like you said, they closed the season with a much better slate. TCU moved up by virtue of its schedule recently, and Baylor has the chance to do that too. If Baylor wins out, it's 11-1. They are at the very worst tied for the conference championship with either Kansas State or TCU. I mean, that's the very worst that can happen if Baylor wins out. And if that's the case, they have the head-to-head tiebreaker with both. So they would be the Big 12 champion. So I'm not getting too riled up about the rankings because I did last week, and I realize that it's pointless at this point. So I'm just, like Bryce Petty, I'm just ready for OU.
And I'm ready for OU. But before we go to our next ones, Kevin, anything on the recruiting front that we ought to cover?
Just a couple of quick things. Khalil Houghton, the Waco Midway safety, came in for his official visit last week for the Kansas game for homecoming and had a great time. Really got a better perspective of what student life is there on the campus because he's been over on the campus so many times in the summer when the campus was basically empty. So I think it gave him a better perspective. We still got a little ways to go on him, guys, because the fact that he's going to take maybe an unofficial visit to Texas Tech on the 15th and potentially take an official up to Notre Dame. So this is going to take a while to see what happens here. I think Notre Dame has started to make more and more of a presence in this. I think Baylor is very, very much in this. But my personal feeling is that if Notre Dame becomes more of the team in this race that I think it is, then this is a three-team race between Baylor, Oklahoma, and Notre Dame. I think if he makes Tech an unofficial visit, I think that really cripples Tech's chances. Plus, the season that Tech is having doesn't help either. A couple of other quick notes. It was reported on our site, it's well after the fact that it's all circulated, but Cedar Hill linebacker and Texas A&M commit Richard Moore was at the game against Kansas. That's a big move there for Baylor. They were the first ones to offer him. He's about 6'1", 200 pounds, give or take. He's a guy that Baylor really wanted bad, and I think they were really upset when he committed to A&M back in the summertime. And the fact that A&M is kind of going through some issues right now, and the fact that they're just staying after him, my personal opinion, guys, I do think that this is going to change, and they're probably going to wind up getting him, but that's just my instinct. And then finally, Darian Daniels, the Bishop Dunn defensive tackle, is going to be taking his official visit to Baylor for the Kansas State game Oklahoma State game on the 22nd, and then don't forget basketball signing day will be on the 12th with the four recruits that have given their commitments to Baylor. That would be Jake Lindsey out of Utah, the most recent guard Wendell Mitchell out of Rockdale, King McClure, and then Joseph Aquil, the junior college center up in Kansas. Again, signing day is next Wednesday, the 12th.
And then one last thing to add, something you had reported, Kevin, so all credit to where credit is due, is Devontae Jones, the 2014 signee who didn't make it in the semester. You have been told he should be in January to enroll in the school, so that's some good news. He was the offensive lineman out of Houston Bel Air.
Well, that's cool. My only thought on it is that with Houghton, I would really be surprised if Tech stays in this. There are so many questions about what's going on with the Tech program right now. I think recruiting is going to get a lot trickier for them until they can kind of turn it around on the field. But I would be, having met Houghton a couple of times, knowing with him, Notre Dame would make me extremely nervous trying to recruit against them just because of there's still kind of that ooh about Notre Dame that, you know, if somebody tells you, hey, you can go to Notre Dame, that's a big sell to somebody, especially a guy like Houghton. When we come back, we are going to go around the world of college football, and we will see you after our break.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting sign, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. I will not pick on the SEC this week and say terrible things about the college football playoffs. What we are going to do is we're going to pick two national games. The first one is Ohio State at Michigan State. And, Kevin, you being our guy that follows the Big Ten, give me your readout.
Great game. Going to go with the Spartans here. Think it's going to be a much better game than I think some people think it's going to be. JT Barrett, who's from Wichita Falls, Rider, is the starting quarterback for Ohio State. He's really come on and had a pretty good year. I think Michigan State's going to be in a position to win this game. I think Connor Cook's having a very solid year for the Spartans. They've had 2 weeks to prepare for this game because they played Michigan at home 2 weeks ago, had the bye last week. And I like Sparty in this one. I think it's going to be a really good football game. And I really love the comments that Urban Meyer made about kind of looking at Michigan State. And it's really, you know, you talk about programs changing perspective or their national appeal, if you will. Michigan State has certainly done that.
Yeah, I'm also going with Michigan State. I'd be tempted to pick Ohio State, especially if we're in Columbus. But I think Michigan State is one of the five or six best teams in the country. And I think they know if they win on Saturday, they have a good chance to get one of those four playoff spots, and I think they'll take advantage of that.
I'm going Michigan State. Michigan State has always been a pretty good team, but in the Big Ten world, they've always been in the shadow of Michigan and Ohio State. Those just seem to be kind of the marquee teams, the Big Ten. And I think that Michigan State, you know, I hate to use a cliche, but chip on the shoulder. They used that, you know, driving the spike against Michigan, and they used the, I think they're motivated. I think they want it, and I think they got better talent than Ohio State. And it's at home. And they've had a bye week to prepare.
Yep.
So then we have Alabama at LSU, and once again, this is in the Bayou, which makes it maybe a little bit trickier to pick than it might have been otherwise. Jake, why don't you start us on this one?
Well, I'm going to pick Alabama, basically because I'm going to give them the same benefit of the doubt that the playoff committee is giving them. Really, who has Alabama beaten other than West Virginia? Really, nobody that you can build a resume on. They lost to Ole Miss. They still have to play LSU and Mississippi State. Barely won at Arkansas. So right now, this team is in the top five in the playoff based on reputation, and frankly, not what they've done this year. It's a very unconfident pick for me, but I am going to pick Alabama and get a win that will actually help them earn the ranking they currently have.
For me, I'll go with the Tide. Not so much because of what I think they can do. I think it's a case of what LSU cannot do, and that's play consistent offense. And my biggest problem is the fact that they just do not get steady quarterback play, whether if it's between Jefferson or Brandon Harris. They just cannot get anything moving between those two. And I know that they scored 41 points against Kentucky. That's great. But look, I mean, the game against Ole Miss, and everyone just pats themselves on the back and says, man, that was a great old-school football game. I'm like, sure, that's great. But, man, it was really kind of a tough watch, too. I meant Jefferson. But between Jennings and Harris, I just do not think that there's the quality play at quarterback for LSU for them to make plays when they need to. And Leonard Fournette, for as much ballyhooed as he's received coming into this program, he's been pretty good. I wouldn't say that he's been a world beater. If he could probably clean up his fumble issues, he would be in a much better shape where you could feel confident with him. LSU's defense is fine. They've allowed, seven or fewer points in four of their last five games. But I still like the Tide in a close game.
I'm going with the LSU Corn Dogs. I don't like picking against LSU at home, and I think this is an evening game. Weird things happen in Bayou Country at night, and I'm.
That is a great point, Stephen. Too.
And you sound like you speak from experience.
I actually lived in Louisiana for a couple of years, and one of the things I've always liked about the Tigers is the way they spell go. So anyway, I'm going LSU. Now, moving into the Big 12, Texas Tech and OSU are off, and the Texas Tech defense has already had three bye weeks the last 3 weeks because I don't think they played. OSU needs to kind of lick their wounds and get back into shape. And now we come to one that could be kind of interesting, West Virginia at Texas. And I think Texas has improved over the course of the season, but I don't think they've improved enough to take out West Virginia. I think West Virginia's got a little bit too much for the Longhorns this year. Jake, your thought?
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I think people are kind of overestimating Texas's chances based on how they looked against Texas Tech, which I can't read into that game too much. And also based on West Virginia coming off an emotional loss, I think you put these two teams on a neutral field, and West Virginia wins by at least two touchdowns. Obviously, it's going to be different it being in Austin, but I think West Virginia is just a much better team right now. And I like Texas defense, but I don't think they can slow down West Virginia's offense all game. And West Virginia's defense is much better than I realized coming into the season. So I like the Mountaineers.
And I'll go with Texas, only because, and it has nothing to do with the way the Longhorns are coming off their game against Tech. I think the reason why I'm going in that direction is because I'm starting to see something in West Virginia's offense where they're a little bit too loose with the football, the turnovers, and how they just really, really, they should have won the game over TCU by several scores, but the way they just kind of built into a shell. That's a team that has a confidence issue, plus the fact you've had Kevin White completely isolated in the last two games. What is it, like three, four catches for 55 yards total between Oklahoma State and TCU? And I could see Texas really kind of – I think teams might be starting to figure out what you do against them. The deeper a season goes, I think now they kind of figure out what they want to do with it. And I'm going just with a gut. I don't think it's anything that I've eaten that's causing this, but I still think that – But I'm going to take a chance here, and I think Texas pulls this off.
Wow, you're taking Trickett, or you're taking Swoops over Trickett. I'm impressed, Kevin.
I'm crazy like a fox.
Okay, all right. And next we have the game that is played to not be in last place in the Big 12, and that Iowa State at Kansas. And yeah. I'll go first. Who cares? I'm going with Iowa State. I think that they're a pretty decent team. I think that in a weaker conference that they'd have a winning record right now.
I'm going to agree with that. Make it quick. I'm going to pick Iowa State as well. From what I saw of Kansas last week, they're not going to beat anyone in the Big 12.
Yeah, I'll go with Iowa State.
Okay, and then we have what is considered the marquee game in the Big 12 this time, although it is not for us, and that is Kansas State at TCU. And Kansas State undefeated in Big 12 play. TCU with 1 3-point loss to Baylor, both teams in the top 10. Kevin, you want to jump on this one first?
Yeah, I'm going to go TCU. I just kind of like the role that they're on, and I saw a team that showed a lot of great mental toughness last week in Morgantown, finding a way to pull that out. I mean, the big play that Trevon Boyd can hit to Colby Listenbee that set up the game-winning field goal. I mean, that's a big-time throw that he made on the road in horrible weather conditions up there. And you're just starting to see it. That's been the fun story. I mean, not to say that you want to enjoy stories with TCU. I'm not saying that. But it is really remarkable to see the transformation of Trevon Boykin into this playmaker where he's become a Heisman Trophy candidate. I mean, let's call it for what it is. And I just, you know, Kansas State doesn't beat itself, and that's the way they're going to have to play on Saturday in Fort Worth. But I just think that TCU's kind of got this role going right now, and I think they beat the Wildcats.
Yeah, I'm also picking TCU. I remember telling a friend in like 2007 or 2008 that if you could combine Mike Leach's offense with what TCU does on defense, you'd have a pretty incredible team. Someone must have heard me, but 7 years later, because that's what they have, Sonny Cumbie running the show on offense. And look, when you pair a good offense with what's been consistently one of the better defenses in the country, what you have is a really good team, and TCU is not a mirage this year. They've earned where they are. Now, I think it's debatable about having them ranked ahead of Baylor, but fact is they're a very good team.
Yeah.
Kansas State, they rank in the bottom three in tackles for loss and sacks, and that's not the kind of combination you want when the best way to beat TCU is to pressure Trevon Boykin. And if they can't do that, and if Boykin has time, he's not a guy who picks you apart, but he's a guy who's going to throw over the top all day. And I think TCU is going to get a few big scores in this, and I don't think Kansas State can hang on with him. So I'm going to pick TCU too.
Well, I was planning to go to Kansas State, but when I heard Kevin pick TCU, because I know that Kevin does not have a man crush on Gary Patterson.
A lot of respect for him, though, that's for sure.
You got to respect the guy. And well, I've gotten burned picking against TCU. I'm still going Kansas State.
All right.
I believe in the Purple Wizard.
Somebody in purple's winning that game, that's for sure.
Somebody in purple's winning that game. All right, now we've already kicked over Baylor at Oklahoma and everything. It's now just down to making our picks and the score. I am going, Jake and I talked about this during the break, I am going with Baylor 34-31.
A very plausible score, Stephen. But one that I do not agree with. I picked Oklahoma in this game before the season. These are not the two teams I thought we'd see before the season. And the reason I'm picking Oklahoma is I just haven't seen enough from Baylor to say they take a great game on the road against a very good team. Had they done that against West Virginia, even if they barely lost to West Virginia, I might pick Baylor. But they did not look good in that game. They had troubles in the first half against Kansas. The team struggles inside the red zone at times. I'd love to pick Baylor. I think Oklahoma is going to play a great game, and I'm going to pick Oklahoma 37-30.
I guess it's up to me to settle the tie then. Okay. I've gone so back and forth on this game. I really have. And as of Tuesday night, I was saying, all right, I'm picking Oklahoma to win this game. As of Tuesday night. And then I just thought, you know, I'm going to give it one more shot with the Bears here on this, on a big stage on the road in a place where they've never won. You know, Jake, you and I have talked about the fact that is this team really ready to – is this the kind of team that's built to win a game like this other than Norman? You know, we can have our debates about that. But I also think, too – if there is ever a Baylor team that was constructed at least good enough to win in Norman, this is the team that can do it. And I just have this feeling that they're going to – and the other thing, I'm going with Baylor because, one, I think they're going to be able to run the football pretty well there. Two, I think Oklahoma's offense still just doesn't convince me that they're a full-fledged group. I don't care what they did against Iowa State. Iowa State's one of the worst defenses – in the Big 12, if not the country. So I kind of have to discount that. And Baylor's far better than that. I just think that Baylor is going to find a way to pull this off and make history there. I'm going to say Baylor 44, Oklahoma 41. one in double overtime.
Oh, that is beautiful stuff.
If Oklahoma kicks a field goal on its possession in overtime, Baylor scores a touchdown, and they run off the field, and that's
it. Well, I'm going to be there at the game in the stands. Steven is covering it for Sikkim Sports. I'm going as a fan, even though I did pick Oklahoma to win. Kevin, if that scenario plays out, someone come get me out of the Norman jail because I'm rushing the field.
Ooh. Okay, and Kevin, you said 47-41?
I said 44-41.
So all of us are picking this to be a one-score game. And, yeah, I'll be on the sidelines, and we'll be tweeting and sending photographs. And, Jake, you're not completely off duty. You got to shoot out some tweets and make some comments.
No, I will have my usual commentary, the type of commentary that loses me followers every other minute.
Okay, and, yeah, and remember, put your profanity filter on your phone, because Baylor scores or whether Oklahoma scores, you're going to have a cuss word to say. All right? So, hey, guys, we will be back next week to kick over what we are all hoping will be a big Baylor victory, and we'll see you next week.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.